Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 82 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Jacob Lindberg.
We just thought it could be, you know, it's just a necessary adjunct to the laws that we already have.
The city of Maysville has passed a fairness ordinance.
Moorhead State University is looking to reduce facility costs.
A missing Rowan County teen has been found.
Authorities seized enough fentanyl to kill 32,000 people in a Carter County drug bust this week.
A restaurant employee in Hazard has been indicted for tampering with a police officer's food.
In sports, the Reds host the Arizona Diamondbacks tonight at 7:10.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 66 degrees. Stay tuned for an extended weather forecast after this news.
The City of Maysville Board of Commissioners unanimously passed an ordinance on Thursday that added sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes in its human rights and housing ordinances. Maysville now becomes the 10th city in the state to include these groups, along with race, age, sex, disability, and religion to their human rights ordinances. Mayor David Cartmell says the new additions to the law were crafted by its Commission on Human Rights.
You know, we have pretty diverse populace here in Maysville. And we had a human rights commission that was active anyway. And so we charged them with, taking on the chore of putting together, the ordinance. So we crafted some legislation, and the city council was all for it.
The commission worked with the city's attorney for more than a year to craft the right language for the new legislation. The law also protects the right to religious practices.
Facilities management is one of the issues at the forefront of Moorhead State University's strategic plan. In response to steep budget cuts, the university is looking to reduce its overhead expenditures, and lowering facility costs is among the top cost-cutting measures on the table. On that topic, MSU President Dr. Jay Morgan laid out the future plans for the Laughlin Health Building during this week's convocation.
Laughlin has been a grand building for the university for many years. We've been in communication with the city and the county and the Tourism Commission here locally, trying to move that more toward a community center, a very blended community center. So activities in there will probably start to come to a close right around Labor Day or so.
Moorhead City officials have expressed particular interest in the opportunity that leasing the center could provide. Some are cautious, however, about the cost to maintain the building, and they say they would only be willing to entertain the proposal if ways could be found to reduce utility and other expenses.
Moorhead firefighters responded to a call this afternoon on the campus of Moorhead State University. Officials say an alarm was activated in the alumni tower dorm, and the building was evacuated while crews checked things out. MSU Police Detective Mike Martin says no one in the building was actually in any danger.
Upon arriving, it was determined it was room 812. Once investigating, found that the smoke detector had went off there in the room as due to use of the microwave.
Martin says students should try to remember that the fire detection systems on campus are very sensitive and to be more aware when cooking. Candles and scent warmers are also prohibited on campus housing.
A missing Rowan County teenager was found in Fayette County last night. According to the Rowan County Sheriff's Deputy Joe Klein, 17-year-old Corey Lear and another unnamed minor were found by authorities in Fayette County.
It wasn't really missing. They were on the run because of criminal charges, and I'm not sure exactly what they are at this point. Deputy Hollis is doing the investigation.
Because both of the teens are minors, authorities are unable to release details about pending charges the teens may face.
A Carter County woman says she was shocked to learn of a drug bust that happened at the home of her son this week. Members of the Fiveco Area Drug Enforcement Task Force raided the home of Michael Griffith near Grayson on Wednesday. There, they arrested 26-year-old Clayton Hill, who was charged with 4 counts of trafficking heroin. Marianne Griffith tells WSAZ she met Hill, who was living with her son Michael, but had no idea that either man was involved with drugs.
It's heartbreaking to sit there and think your son is a dime. time from taking pills, even if my son did it. He's my son. I love him. I love him as much as you. I love him as much if he's a drug dealer as I would if he was a doctor, or lawyer, or anything else.
Authorities say when they arrested Hill, they seized enough fentanyl to kill 32,000 people. More charges in the case are expected.
The man accused of killing a Pikeville police officer earlier this year appeared in court yesterday. According to EKB News, 55-year-old John Russell Hall is accused of shooting and killing Pikeville patrolman Scotty Hamilton on March 13th. Yesterday's trial confirmed that the defense has received evidence from the prosecutors. Pike Commonwealth Attorney Rick Bartley said more evidence is still being processed, which could take 6 to 8 weeks to be available. Prosecutors say they intend to seek the death penalty in this case.
A Floyd County fire damaged some houseboats earlier this week, and investigators are still trying to figure out what happened. According to LEX18, the fire happened sometime Tuesday night at Prestonsburg's Jenny Wiley State Park. Officials say a park ranger saw the flames around midnight and immediately contacted the fire department. Although three houseboats were destroyed and several others were damaged in the blaze, no one was inside the boats at the time, and no injuries have been reported.
The FBI says the man wanted for making threats against war hero Dakota Mayer and President Donald Trump stole a vehicle and may be in West Virginia. Investigators tell WKYT they are looking for a green 2001 Jeep Cherokee with a black hood. They believe it was stolen by Sean Christie. A grand jury indicted Christie for threats to the president and law enforcement officers. A pickup believed to be stolen by Christie was found in Adair County Saturday, leading investigators to search throughout the area. The FBI is now offering a $10,000 award.
A Captain D's employee in Hazard has been indicted after tampering with a policeman's meal. WYMT reports 42-year-old Joey Ritchie is accused of using his bare hands and mouth to prepare food for Hazard Assistant Police Chief Joe Engel. According to court documents, Ritchie intentionally handled rice without gloves, even putting some in his mouth and letting it fall back into the rest of the rice. Officials say Ritchie knew he was serving the meal to Engel and that he knew Engel was a police officer. Ritchie is charged with first-degree wanton endangerment of a police officer and third-degree assault. We'll have more of your region's headlines right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop, promoting literacy and reading in the MSPR listening area since 1978. Coffee Tree Books, where books are ordered every day and special orders can easily be accommodated, featuring a variety of gifts, cards, locally made crafts, and now a complete yarn shop, a community bookstore located at 159 East Main Street in Moorhead. The Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop and Coffee Tree Books are open Monday through Saturday, online, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin's office has announced it will move forward in a legal dispute over the state's recently passed pension reform law. According to WKYT, the governor's office released a statement from General Counsel Steve Pitt, who says the office filed an appeal today to bypass the Court of Appeals and go straight to the Kentucky Supreme Court in an effort to expedite the legal battle. Attorney General Andy Beshear filed a lawsuit following the bill's passage for multiple reasons. Franklin Circuit Court Judge Philip Shepard ruled the law was unconstitutional because the General Assembly passed it in violation of the three readings requirement and the majority vote requirement. The Republican-backed law would move new teacher hires into a hybrid plan that puts less risk on the state but doesn't guarantee them the same benefits. Supporters say it was a necessary step to keep the pension system solvent. Beshear has argued the law also violates the inviolable contract, which states benefits provided cannot be subject to reduction or impairment by alteration, amendment, or repeal. Judge Shepard did not rule on that argument.
Eight former supervisors and safety officers at a Kentucky coal company have pleaded not guilty in federal court to charges they rigged dust monitoring in underground mines. The officials at Armstrong Coal were arraigned this week in Owensboro and Bowling Green. An indictment alleges company officials ordered workers to remove dust sampling equipment and place it in clean air portions of the mine to get desirable readings. The incident says that the alleged offense happened at Armstrong's Parkway and Kronos Mines between 2013 and 2015. Charlie Barber, the former superintendent of Parkway Mine in Muhlenberg County, had a separate arraignment Thursday in Bowling Green. The other defendants appeared before a judge earlier in the week. The trial is scheduled to begin on October 3rd.
The remains of a Kentucky soldier who disappeared after a 1950 Korean War battle will be returned home for a burial with full military honors. Army Private First Class Joe Elmore's remains were originally thought to be of a British soldier when they were discovered in North Korea in 1995, but they could not be identified. The remains were later buried in South Korea. Nearly 20 years later, the remains were removed from the grave and transported to the Defense Department's POW/MIA accounting agency, which seeks to identify missing and unidentified American soldiers. The agency used DNA to match the remains to Elmore. Elmore was 20 when he died on December 2, 1950 in North Korea. He will be given a military funeral in Albany, Kentucky on August 18th.
Just 5 months after the Kentucky Public Service Commission approved a rate increase, a troubled water district is asking for another one to stave off financial collapse. The Associated Press reports Martin County Water District officially asked the commission for an increase of about 18% on Tuesday. The district had applied for an increase of nearly 50% for its 3,500 customers in January, but was granted a 17.5% increase and 10% surcharge in March. Martin County Water Board Treasurer Jimmy Kerr says the request makes him ill because of the financial impact on customers, but he says it's necessary. No decision has been made in that request. The district's management is currently under investigation by Attorney General Andy Beshear.
The U.S. Forest Service is continuing a ban on ginseng harvesting in the Daniel Boone National Forest in eastern Kentucky. Federal officials say they issued the ban in 2016 to stop the decline of wild ginseng in the area. The service previously had issued permits for ginseng collectors. The root of the plant is touted as an herbal medicine for various ailments. Federal officials say much of wild ginseng's decline is attributed to illegal harvest methods, a problem throughout southern Appalachian states. The penalty for illegally removing wild ginseng from national forest lands includes a fine up to $5,000 or a six-month sentence in federal prison or both.
A new study says Kentucky is falling short when it comes to cancer-fighting policies. A new report on state legislative activity to reduce cancer incidences and mortality shows Kentucky leads all states in incidences and mortalities from cancer. Marcia Lowe is with the Cancer Action Network, and she says smoking is still a big contributor to the state's overall cancer rates.
We now have the second highest smoking rates for adults and youth among all 50 states.
The study rates states in 9 specific areas of public policy that can help fight cancer, including funding for cancer screening programs, smoke-free laws, cigarette tax levies, and funding for tobacco prevention and cessation programs. Specifically, Kentucky needs to do better when it comes to preventing cancer and provide better access to care for those diagnosed.
Turning now to the area weather forecast, mostly cloudy tonight with a 20% chance of isolated showers, lows around 67 degrees. On Saturday, scattered showers with thunderstorms also possible in the afternoon, partly sunny and highs near 83 degrees, and a 40% chance of rain. Saturday night, 40% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with lows around 65 degrees. In Flemingsburg right now, it's 82 degrees, Lexington 81, Ashland 86 degrees, Winchester 81, Inez 81, and here in Moorhead on the campus of Moorhead State University, it's 82 degrees.
On our feature segment today, commentator John Modaff returns. He ponders the dangers of bacon compared to other everyday risks that we take.
Nothing says time to eat like the fragrance of bacon. It's breakfast, it's lunch, it's dinner. It's wrapped around donuts, hot dogs, filet mignon, and Twinkies that are deep fried. It's the most amazing conversion of feed into fantastic that the farm produces. And now it's off the plate. Experts have warned, right along with the triumphant introduction of bacon into every possible food setting you can imagine, that bacon is bad, really bad. Not only does it come from pigs, which have their own social stigma to deal with due to their historic association with things devilish, and the fact that they like to wallow in their own filth, But now we hear that beyond the pigs, human beings take this natural item and make it into something even more dangerous. Common practices in curing bacon apparently lead to the introduction of substances such as nitrates that cause a range of dysfunctions beyond mere obesity. A recent report out of Johns Hopkins warning the world about bacon has averred that eating bacon and other nitrate-laced meats can lead to episodes of mania. They also mention euphoria as a side effect, which I can confirm after a recent bacon-eating field experiment. Actually, many of us just have to hear and smell bacon frying to experience euphoria. But beyond euphoria, what's this with people wanting to treat mania as a bad thing? And sleeplessness? And migraine? Picky, picky. So, okay, let's accept for a moment that bacon might be a bad thing. But is that a bad thing? Let's compare bacon to other bad things we do without question and see if it's worth the trade-off we've accepted in other areas of life. Compare the risks of eating bacon with a chance at a euphoric mania that keeps you up all night writing a brilliant sequel to Animal Farm. Compare that to, say, driving highways jammed with intoxicated maniacs or police with chips on their shoulders. Or compare eating bacon to going to the hospital, where you've got a very high chance of being killed by a medical error or sloth. Or compare eating delicious hot crispy bacon on the perfect BLT to, say, trusting the IRS not to shut down your 501c3 because you dared to support conservative principles. Which is more safe of these? I'd side with bacon every time. So let's consider the risks posed by bacon in context. Driving, abysmal medical care due to cancerous bureaucracy, sickening social media, lunatic Uber drivers who hate customers who think freely, an education system that graduates people from 12 years of school who can barely read or do math, a president who makes outrage a daily meal service, a military that is spread so thin you could read a magazine right through it, a crumbling infrastructure that makes even walking a hazard. All of this can't be better than bacon. But let's play along and get off the pigs for a while. Let's stop eating bacon and immediately improve the world. No, wait, what? What, bacon fuels productivity? Bacon leads to a mania, and that can be a good thing properly directed. You mean bacon smoked with applewood, L.R. Scaricide, might actually be good for me? Thanks, Oscar Mayer. Thanks, Jimmy Dean. I knew you'd straighten this out. I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is a professor of speech at Morehead State University. It's 4:47 and 82 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Jacob Lindberg, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio here in Breckenridge Hall. Thank you so much for joining us on this fantastic Friday afternoon. Tilden Johnson has sports right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe, across from St. Clair Healthcare on Flemingsburg Road in Morehead. Rutabaker's has made from scratch cakes, pies, and cookies, scones, braids, and muffins. Lunch menu features sandwiches, soups, and salads. Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe is open Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Takeout orders and lunch reservations at 780-4282 or online at rutabakers.com.
The Reds are at home. Reporting for WMKY Sports, I'm Tilden Johnson. After losing their series against the Mets, the Cincinnati Reds are preparing to start another three-game set. This time, it's at home and against the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Reds are currently 50-65 on the year, whereas Arizona is 64-52. Reds manager Jim Riggleman told Fox Sports Ohio he is hoping for a better series than that of the Mets, and though being at home is great, it's no guarantee.
I love being at home, that's for sure, you know, but you're going to play the same amount of home and away. You got to win ball games on the road, and we did not have a good road trip, and going home doesn't solve your problems. You got to play good when you get home.
Tonight's game starts at 7:10. Also from the majors, the Chicago Cubs have signed veteran left-hander Jorge De La Rosa and transferred righty Yu Darvish to the 60-day disabled list to make room for him on the 40-man roster. The Cubs also optioned left-hander Randy Rosario to AAA Iowa to create a spot for De La Rosa on the active roster today. With their first scrimmage of the season under their belt, the Rowan County Viking football team will be hitting the road again this weekend. Head coach Kelly Ford says last weekend's work gave him some ideas for improvement, and this Saturday's trip to Russell will be another great opportunity.
going to go to Russell. It's our EKC Gridorama. We play Russell at 8 p.m. on Saturday, and it is a game format. The varsity get the first three quarters, and then freshman JV gets the last quarter, and everything live bull. It's just like game situation.
Opening day for the JV team is the 13th, and the varsity will open up on the 17th at home against Morgan County. The Cincinnati Bengals staved off some last-second special teams trickery from the Chicago Bears to win last night's first preseason game of the year by a score of 32-27. Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis says the win is very positive.
You know, it's great to see our young guys go out and play, to have Joe have a play like that, John have a play where he makes guys miss. That's what, you know, our lifeblood is these guys and their athleticism and so forth. You know, Mark Walton. For them to make the people miss in the open field, that's why we have them.
Running back Joe Mixon caught a 24-yard touchdown pass from Andy Dalton in the first quarter to kick off the scoring for the Bengals. Dalton would finish 6 of 8 for 103 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception before calling it an early night. Cincinnati travels to the Lone Star State next week to take on the Dallas Cowboys in week 2 of the preseason. Teams that also won in last night's start to the NFL preseason were Carolina, the Buccaneers, Cleveland, the Steelers, New Orleans, the Ravens, Green Bay, the Texans, San Francisco, and the Colts. 8 teams are left to play during Week 1, which comprises tonight and tomorrow. Washington Redskins rookie running back Darius Geis is out for the season after tearing the ACL in his left knee. Geis was injured in Washington's preseason opener at New England last night. The team announced the prognosis today following an MRI, saying Geis should make a full recovery and be ready to play in 2019. Geis was expected to be the Redskins starter after they selected him 59th overall in the draft. The LSU product was considered a first-round prospect and went late in the second. And the NFL says a bad football was used in last night's Steelers versus Eagles preseason opener. The league said in a statement today that the ball was removed from play during the third quarter of the Steelers-Eagles game in Philadelphia and will be sent back to the manufacturer, Wilson, for review. Questions about an underflated football flared among fans online after the preseason opener when a sideline radio reporter tweeted that he saw a ball looking very deflated after an incompletion thrown by Pittsburgh rookie Mason Rudolph. The U.S. Supreme Court's decision that allows states to legalize sports gambling has sparked a debate about requiring injury reports in college football. NCAA leaders are analyzing whether it's possible to have more medical transparency to prevent collusion and be more consistent. That's a tough task with hundreds of teams balancing the rules of various universities, conferences, and state and federal laws. No formal plans have been proposed as legal experts and compliance officers analyze an issue that's more complicated for college football than the NFL, which has a mandated reporting system. The University of Kentucky basketball Wildcats finished their second game in the Island yesterday with a W. The Cats beat Sal Lorenzo de Almagra 91-68 despite a power outage during the first half of the game. The idea of calling the game was tossed around during the outage, but 6'5 freshman guard Tyler Hero told Big Blue Insider the Cats weren't keen on the idea.
It was crazy. I thought somebody had just turned off the lights, but I guess the power went out or something like that. So it was a little bit different. That never had happened to me during a game. We've been playing against each other all summer, so I think getting against another team like yesterday and today and the next two games, that's something that we've been waiting to do. So, I mean, you know, we wanted to finish the game and play against another team as much as possible.
Hero shot 70% last night, racking up 22 points. The Cats will play 2 more games in the Bahamas. Tomorrow night at 7, they will face Mega B-Mix, and at 4 on Sunday, they will take on Team Toronto. The Morehead State Volleyball Eagles have started their season off on the right foot after last night's 5-2 exhibition win over Marshall in Huntington. Abby Vanove, a freshman from Lexington, was the team lead scorer with 3 goals and an assist. Kara Mayer and Colleen Swift both tallied goals and an assist each. Tia Williams also racked in 2 assists to aid the Eagles to their 5-0 victory over the Herd. The Volleyball Eagles continue play in Louisville tomorrow evening with another exhibition match at 6 o'clock. And lastly in sports, Tennessee women's basketball coach Holly Warlick has received a 3-year contract extension. Athletic Director Philip Fulmer announced today that Warlick's contract now runs through the 2021-22 season. Warlick's deal was set to expire at the end of the 2018-19 season. For WMKY Sports, I'm Tilden Johnson.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics. Eagles soccer and football season tickets are now available. Soccer has 7 home games, including their home opener with Ball State on August 26th. Football has 6 home games and hosting Mount St. Joseph on September 8th. More information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. Stocks fell as geopolitical concerns pushed the Turkish lira to a record low against the dollar and rattled investors worldwide. And the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 196.09 to 25,313.14. And the Dow also erased all of its gains for the month of August and posted a 3-day losing streak. The S&P 500 fell 0.7%, closing at 2833.28, and the NASDAQ Composite also pulled back 0.7% to 7839.11, and the NASDAQ snapped an 8-day winning streak as well. Bank shares led the way lower in the U.S. as Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley all dropped at least 1%. Tech shares also fell as Facebook, Alphabet, and Amazon all declined. The Turkish lira briefly fell 20% to a record low after President Trump authorized the doubling of metals tariffs on Turkey. The currency later traded down about 15% against the dollar. And the drop in the currency came after a Turkish delegation returned from Washington with no apparent progress being made on the detention of Andrew Brunson, an American pastor detained in Turkey since 2016. The geopolitical worries come as the U.S. is embroiled in a trade war with China, and this week both governments announced the possibility of imposing tit-for-tat tariffs on an additional $16 billion worth of goods. And European stocks were under pressure because of the turmoil in Turkey today. The Stoxx 600 Index, which is made up of a broad swath of European shares, dropped 1.1%. And with the crisis mode governing today's action, Treasury bond prices rose and yields dropped today. The benchmark 10-year yield fell to 2.875%, while the 2-year yield slipped to 2.61%. The Consumer Price Index came in with a 0.2% increase last month, according to the Labor Department, and the core CPI hit 2.4% in July. This marked its biggest jump since September 2008. Among Dow industrial stocks, the best performers today were Walmart and Chevron, while your worst performers were Intel and Caterpillar. In the S&P 500, the best performers were Helmerich & Payne and Take-Two Interactive, and the worst performers were News Corporation and Microchip Technologies. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Global down 65 cents at 85.46, CSX up 22 cents at 72.39, AK Steel down 7 cents at 4.30, Marathon Petroleum up 19 cents at 80.94, AEP down 12 cents at 70.86, and Kroger was up 32 cents, finishing at 30.14. Reporting for WMKY, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Moorhead. The center offers a convenient 24-hour drop-off for a variety of recyclables and on-site pickup program for Round County businesses. Shredding services are available for businesses or individuals, and the center provides tours for classrooms and civic groups. Located near the Moorhead City Park, the Community Recycling Center also accepts computers, printers and fax machines, DVDs, CDs, phones, video tapes and game devices. More information at 784-1250.
Taking one last look at the weather forecast tonight, mostly cloudy and a 20% chance of isolated showers, lows around 67 degrees, and tomorrow scattered showers with thunderstorms possible in the afternoon, partly sunny with highs near 83 degrees. In Flemingsburg right now it's 82 degrees, Lexington 81, Ashland 86, Winchester 81, Inez 81, and here in Moorhead on the campus of Moorhead State University, it's 82 degrees.
And that's going to do it today for Mountain Edition. We had help from Joe Lewis, Cody Robinson, Chad Jenkins, Kyle Blankenbuehler, Brian Courtney, Paul Hitchcock, Greg Jenkins, and Tilden Johnson. WUKY's Josh James and Hilliard Lyons' Bud Luke. And our feature segment came from Moorhead State University's Dr. John Modaff. This is Moorhead State Public Radio. WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202BH9S. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Jacob Lindberg and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.